Good morning. Daf Dalin Beitza. We are on Daf Gimel Amid Beis. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf to Lubi Lern, Lezecha Nishmas, Lois Lupin Zaltzman. We're trying to understand a braisa. The Masechta began just a short couple days ago. And we've covered the first two Dafim of Masechta Beitza, and the topic has been an egg which is Asar on Yantif. The Mishnah says that when the egg is laid on Yantif, it's Asar on Yantif for that day. The next day it's going to be fine. But on that day it's going to be Asar. And why? Why is that egg going to be Asar? So over the first couple days of the Masechta, so we learned that there are basically four different approaches in terms of understanding why the egg which is laid on Yantif is going to be Asar. One of the first approach is that of Rav Nachman, and that is it's an issue of Muksa. In other words, the egg is coming from, emanating from a chicken. The chicken was earmarked as an egg-laying chicken, so therefore going into Yantav, we had no intention of eating the chicken, and so therefore the egg that it produces also is going to be muksa as well. And so the first approach is that it's a issue of muksa. The Gemara points out it's a difficult approach in the Mishnah in that why are we discussing the egg? Why are we not discussing the mother? Meaning the chicken really should be the main issue, and the egg, of course, is just a derivative. It's just a secondary issue. Okay, so that was a challenge on that first approach. The second approach of the Gemara is Hachana. It's a function of Hachana, what we call Hachana de Rabba. We call Hachana de Rabba because the Amara who espouses his viewpoint is Rabba. And Hachana de Rabba is telling us that in order for any food to be edible on Yantav, or for that matter on Shabbos as well, it's got to be prepared from the week, from a weekday. You cannot have a preparation where you're going from a Shabbos to a Yantav or from a Yantav to Shabbos. That is not Mulchan. In order for something to be Mulchan, it has to be prepared from a weekday to a Shabbos. This egg, which was laid on Yantiv, is not. This egg, which was laid on Yantiv, in the event that Yantiv immediately followed Shabbos, or in the event that Shabbos immediately followed Yantiv, so this egg was prepared on a Shabbos. Meaning, again, let's just say it simply: if I have Shabbos followed by Yantiv, and the egg was laid on Yantiv, so that means that it was Muchan on Shabbos, and therefore it is not properly Muchan. It's not. It doesn't satisfy the requirement of Hachana, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. That's the second approach, and that's given by Rabbah. We pointed out, according to Rabbah, it comes out then that this is an Issa D'Oraisa. It's a biblical prohibition, considering the fact that it's not Mukhan. And then there are two other explanations that were given in the Gemara, one by Rav Yosef, and the other one is by Rav Yitzchak. Rav Yosef says that the egg that comes down on Shabbos is rabbinically prohibited. Sorry, let me say it again. The egg that comes out on Yantiv is rabbinically prohibited, and the reason why is because it's very analogous to a fruit that fell off a tree on Shabbos or on Yantiv. The fruit that fell off a tree on Shabbos and Yantiv is going to be prohibited because of a rabbinic decree, I may come up and I may pull the fruit off the tree. So therefore, the same thing is true regarding the egg that comes out of the chicken. So there, and the Gemara asked the question, isn't that a double derabbanan? Isn't that a gzer on top of the gzer? And the Gemara says, no, that was all part of the original decree. That was all part of the original gzer. And then the fourth approach that we saw was Rabbi Yitzchak, and as we saw in yesterday's daf, Rabbi Yochanan also agrees to this approach as well, that it's a gzer because of fruit that comes out of a juice. Fruit, other way around. Juice that comes out of a fruit is going to be rabbinically prohibited. Even if it just came out on its own, it's going to be rabbinically prohibited. The gzera is based on the fact that if I'm going to enjoy the juice, I may come to squeeze the fruit. So therefore, the juice, even if it comes out on its own, it's going to be rabbinically prohibited. And the fourth approach, that of Rabbi Yitzchak, that of Rabbi Yochanan, is the same thing is true regarding the egg as well. The egg that comes out of the chicken is also going to be prohibited based on this gzera. Okay, it's not a perfect analogy. The Gemara noted yesterday, an egg is a food, and the juice is obviously a liquid, and okay, it's not a perfect analogy, but that's the fourth approach, that of Rabbi Yitzchak and that of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so in just a short couple of minutes, we're able to review the first two blot. Yeah.
Don't we hold that we actually do squeeze the fruit?
Into a solid, you could squeeze the fruit, that's correct. But in other words, but
Shema, they could come to squeeze it.
Right, but the understood, but the gzera is working with the assumption that you're just going to squeeze it for its juice. Meaning you're right. In other words, there are certain times where you're allowed to squeeze a fruit. But generally speaking, though, squeezing it on its own, it's an issa d'oraisa. If I'm not squeezing onto a food, if I'm just doing it for the juice, that's an issa d'oraisa. That's a malach of dash. So the Gemara says the same thing with the egg. The egg also is just it's conceptually the same idea. Okay. And where does that bring us now? That brings us to Gimel Amud Beis. And on Gimel Amud Beis, so we had a Braisa, and the Braisa was a little bit challenging. I'm going to just review the Braisa because it's really a lot of our discussion today is going to revolve around the Braisa. So, Meisvei. Just if you could just follow me towards the top of the Amud, I'm just going over the Braisa again because the Braisa is challenging. I'm looking at Gimel Amud Beis. I'm about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. So the Braisa says that if I have an egg which is laid either on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, the egg is muksa. You cannot touch it. You cannot move and touch it. You cannot move it. You can't use it for any functional use. However, but what you can do, says the Braisa, is I could turn a kli upside down on top of the egg in order to safeguard the egg so that the egg doesn't break, and so that after Yom Tov or after Shabbos I can enjoy it. Okay, so far so good. That part of the Braisa is fine. And then the Braisa says, Sveika Asura. Now, if it's a Suffolk, it's going to be prohibited. And then the Braisa says, in its Arva Be'elav Kulan Asuras, if this egg gets mixed up with 1,000 other eggs, they're all going to be prohibited. Okay, these last 2 points of the Braisa are really problematic and really difficult to understand. Why? So as we pointed out yesterday, we went through this Braisa yesterday. So as we pointed out yesterday, well, let's take each point in of itself. Suffolk. If in the event the egg is a suffolk. Well, now, what does that mean? Presumably what that means is, I don't know if it was laid on Yom Tov, or maybe it wasn't laid on Yom Tov. I'll give you a simple example. It was laid during Bein HaShemashos. The Bein HaShemashos period between the weekday and Yom Tov is a state of, I don't know. It's a suffolk yom, suffolk laila. The egg was laid at that point in time. I don't know when it was laid. So now, what are we talking about? We're talking about a suffolk on an Issur Derabbanan, meaning muksa, right? I understand we could go in the route of Rabba and Hachana, but let's just say it simply. It's an Issur Derabbanan. We're talking about a suffolk Issur Derabbanan. Generally speaking, when we talk about suffolk Derabbanan, we go Lekula. And the Braisa says, oh, and we're not going to go Lekula, we're going to go Lechumra, right? You can't eat that egg on Yantif. And then furthermore, the Braisa says, if the egg gets mixed in with 1,000 other eggs, they're all going to be Asur. That's also difficult to understand. What are we talking about? We're talking about an Issur Derabbanan. And there's not going to be bittul, there's not going to be nullification. So both parts of those braisa were really difficult to understand. Okay. To which the Gemara says, well, and this we saw this yesterday as well in the Gemara, maybe the braisa is shifting topics. Meaning, obviously, we're still talking about eggs. That you can't change. But maybe the braisa is talking about... maybe the braisa is talking about an egg which came from an animal which is a trefa, meaning the mother that laid the egg was a trefa. Someone came over to me yesterday after she asked me a good question. If the mother's a trefa, so she could produce an egg, meaning she'll be healthy enough and functional enough to produce an egg. And to my memory, which I didn't do any follow up, but to my memory that was the discussion in the Gemara and Chulin whether or not a trefa can actually give birth. So it was a good point. It was raised after the shir. But anyway, either way, the mother was a trefa, or possibly a trefa. Oh, so now the discussion is a little bit smoother. It's a little bit better. Meaning, if the mother's a trefa, so now we're talking about Issur Deraisa. Meaning, if mom's a trefa, for sure the mother, if mom's a trefa, then the mother's absolutely forbidden to eat. Right? You can't shecht and eat the mother. Well, the same thing would be true regarding the egg. Meaning the derivative egg that comes from an animal which is prohibited is going to be equally prohibited. So that means that the egg would be asur min haTorah, would also be biblically forbidden. Okay, that's good. So in other words, now I understand that if the braisa, when it says suffolk, is talking about suffolk trefa, so then actually I have a way of understanding that because it's not a suffolk derabbanan, it's a suffolk deraisa. Fine. But here's where it gets now tricky. The next part of the braisa is talking about tarovis. If this egg is mixed in with 1,000 other eggs, they're all going to be prohibited. Why should that be? That doesn't make any sense. We have a rule of bittul. Bittul tells us that if I have a mixture and the majority is mutter and the minority is heter, let me do that again. If the majority is mutter and the minority is isser, so then there's bittul. So what's going on? So the Gemara says now, on this point, the solution actually is a little bit easier if we're talking about muksa. Now, why should that be? Based on a principle, this is where we ended the shir yesterday, based on the principle of Davar Sheish L'Matirin. The principle of Davar Sheish L'Matirin, which we quickly introduced ourselves to yesterday, is the idea that if something is temporarily prohibited and the prohibition will be lifted after a little bit of time, so then no bittul. Why no bittul? So as Rashi explains, because Asha Tochlenu Be'isser Tochlenu Be'heter. Because right now I have a mixture. Yes, there's a concept in the Torah of bittul, but you know what? rather than base myself on the principle of bittul, allowing me to eat something which is prohibited, why don't we wait? Why don't we wait till tomorrow? Where tomorrow everything is going to become mutter. So therefore, if something is temporarily prohibited, but tomorrow it's going to be okay, the chachamim blocked bittul. Right? The term I use often is bittul blockers. You're going to see there are a lot of bittul blockers out there. So this is bittul blocker. In other words, the chachamim stopped bittul from occurring because let's just wait one day. Because tomorrow everything is going to be okay. Everything's going to be permitted. Okay. The Gemara says, so now truth of the matter is that if in the event we're talking about muksa, meaning the egg is laid on Yontif, and even if, if the egg is laid on Yontif and it gets mixed in with others, I can understand that there's no bittul had we been talking about muksa. Fine. But as the Gemara is arguing, we're not talking about muksa. It sounds like we're talking about treifa because it's a suffix issue. Meaning in the case of suffix, the Brisa says it's going to be prohibited. So it seems like we're talking about a treifa. So how do you understand the next part of the Brisa, where if this egg gets mixed in with 1,000 other eggs, they're all prohibited? Why should that be? If we're talking about treifa, why should that be? This is the question which we're right now sitting on, and this is the question that we're about to start in the Gemara. We're in the Gemara, the V'chitema Beitza Chashuva V'lo Batla. Yeah. So, Iyamart Safik, I'll start right there. Iyamart Safik, I'm right in the middle of the Amun and Gimel on the base, and the Gemara here articulates this question. Iyamart Safik Trefa Davashe Ishein Lamatirani Vitibata Baruba. If we're talking about Trefa, if the Brisa shifted the conversation from Muksa to Trefa, so the Gemara says, so then I really don't understand. One Trefa egg getting mixed in with 1,000 other kosher eggs, there should be Bittul. I mean, you know, we could say it even stronger. If one treifa egg gets mixed in with two kosher eggs, so there's going to be bittul. V'chitem abeitza chashuva v'lo batla. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe the argument will go like this. Maybe there's no bittul, and I'll explain to you why there's no bittul, because of what the Gemara here refers to as davar chashuva. It's significant. And basically for the next, let's say, 15 minutes, we're going to introduce ourselves to another form of bittul blocker. Okay, so again, so we already exposed ourselves today, which was yesterday's daf, to one form of bittul blocker, where the chachamim stepped in and stopped bittul from occurring, and that was davar sheish lo matirin. Now what the Gemara is going to introduce us to is that maybe there are going to be other occasions where the chachamim stopped bittul from occurring, and that's what the Gemara here refers to as a davar chashav. Davar chashav means it's significant. Okay, the question is the following, the issue is the following. How are we going to be defining significance? When do we say that something is significant, so significant that the Chachamim stopped bittul from occurring? So the Gemara says that is subject to a major debate. So the Gemara says, well, you know, part of this question of when the Chachamim said bittul or stopped bittul or not is subject to a reading of a Mishnah. So here's what we'll do. I'm just gonna bulldoze right through those two lines of Gemara, because essentially let's set ourselves up. Meaning first we're gonna do is we're gonna learn a Mishnah together. It's a Mishnah in Arla. After learning the Mishnah in Arla, then we're gonna understand that there are two ways to read the Mishnah. So first things first, let's see the Mishnah in Arla. Did na Misha Yilchavile Talson shall kalai karin yadliku. If I have chavile tilson, you'll forgive me. It's some sort of growth, it's some sort of vegetation. I don't know what it is. It's whatever. It's some plant, some vegetable. So Rashi tells me what it is, but of course Rashi only tells me what it is in Old French. So fenugreek. Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. It doesn't help me. So okay, but either way, it doesn't matter. In other words, it's some sort of vegetable. So chavile tilson shel kalai karim yadliku. So the halacha is that if it comes from a field which is where there are other growth in that field, grapes or olives or whatever. In other words, if it's klaya karam, if it's a field where you had various species planted together in the same field. So now this is kalayim, and we know the halacha is kalayim. You're not allowed to get benefit from. In fact, you have to destroy it. In fact, the Torah says you have to burn it. Okay, nit arvu ba'acheres 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 kulan yaliku divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, what if there's a mixture? And what even if there's a secondary mixture? Meaning this got mixed in to a pile of heter, and then something from here. In other words, and from the first mixture, it gets mixed into a second mixture. Either way, the point is you have to destroy it according to Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim ya'alu ba'achas umasayim. And the Chachamim say, no, there's an opportunity of bittul. There is going to be a subject to bittul. Now, it happens to be the numbers for bittul for Kalayim is they're inflated numbers. I don't mean that in a cynical way. Inflated meaning more than what is normally you normally need for bittul. How much do you normally need for bittul? The answer is very simple. A majority. Okay, don't get confused with 60. 60 is only when there's an issue of taste, meaning when I have one food getting mixed into another and introduces a taste. Here we're just talking about where I have a mixture of different various vegetables. One vegetable is usher, and the two vegetables are mutter. Generally speaking, all I need for bittul to occur is a majority. That's all I need in general. However, when it comes to Truma, when it comes to Arla, when it comes to Klai Akerim, so the numbers jump up. Why do the numbers jump up? Separate discussion, not for us right now. For Truma, what are the numbers for Bittul? 1 to 100. For Arla and for Kalayim, what are the numbers for Bittul? 1 to 200. So in other words, I need one Isser against 200 Heter, then and only then in the world of Arlan, Kalayim, is there going to be Bittul. So the Gemara says, Gemara quotes the opinion of the Chachamim, fine. So if I have those numbers of 1 to 200, they're going to be Bittul. Now, Rabbi Meir says there's no Bittul. Now, here's the part of the Mishnah that we want to see inside, because it's this which we're going to be hinging on. Shehaya Rabbi Meir Omer Eshedarka Limanos Mekadesh. Rabbi Meir says, Eshedarka Limanos. If it's a food that generally sold by count, okay, I'll say that again. This is a critical line. If it's a food that's generally sold by count, there's always going to be prohibited. Now, the word mekadesh, the Gemara uses this word because that's the Torah's language. Pentikdash hamaleya. So, but basically it means it's going to be prohibited. Meaning, any food that's generally sold by count is significant, and the Chachamim stop bittul. Okay? V'chachamim amrim enu mekadesh ala shisha dvarim belvad. Now, the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Meir, but very limited, only in 6 instances. And Rabbi Kiva Omer Shiva, and Rabbi Kiva says no, in 7 instances, ve'eluhen, and here they are. Meaning, we're going to enumerate right now six different types of vegetables which are sold by count. And they are, egoze prach, rimone badan, ve'chavio sustumos, ve'chalfe tardin, ve'kalche kru, ve'dalas yivanis. Now again, I'm just going to avoid translating because even if I translate, I don't know if I'm going to translate them all correctly, and even if I do, I don't even know what some of them are. It doesn't, it matters, but let's just get the concept down. These 6 different vegetables are sold by count. And Rabbi Akiva, mostly fafki karshal balabais. Now Rabbi Akiva adds to the list also rolls that are sold by, not by the baker, but rolls that are sold by the homeowner. But anyway, harai la'ar 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 la'klai karen klai karem. And by the way, obviously, not all these are going to be subject to Arla. Whatever subject to Arla is Arla. Whatever subject to Kalai Karim is Kalai Karim. But anyway, the point is as follows. If it's something which is sold by count, it's significant, and therefore the Chachamim stop Bittul from occurring. Okay, that's the Mishnah in Arla. Now, if that wasn't already difficult enough as it is, what we're going to now sit on is the following. Well, according to Rabbi Meir says that if it's something that's generally sold by count, it's significant, and therefore there's not going to be bittul. Now, if you look carefully at the words of Rabbi Meir, did you see the Mishnah? Just go back to the fourth to last narrow line, where Shehaya Rabbi Meir Omer Es Shedarko Limanos Mekadesh. Key line over there. He says things which are sold by count are significant and therefore not subject to bittul. The Itmar Allah. Now on that line in the Mishnah in Arla, and now we're going to understand. Rabbi Yochanan Omer et shedarko limanos shaninu. Rabbi Shimon Malakish Omer kol shedarko limanos shaninu. Now on that Mishnah, there are two variant girsos. There are two ways to say the Mishnah. Either et shedarko, which happens to be the way we have it in print, or kol shedarko. It's machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And yes, and we've noted a number of times, it's a bit of an oddity that Reish Lakish learned his Torah from Rav Yochanan, and meanwhile has a different girsa in the Mishnah in Arla. Okay, that's challenging and that's difficult, but that's, you know, it's not the first time we've seen it. But meanwhile, however, what's important to us is what's the difference versus Etchedarko Limanos versus Kol Shedarko Limanos. So, according to Reish Lakish, who says Kol Shedarko Limanos means generally sold by count. Not always, but generally. Any food that's generally sold by count is significant and therefore not subject to bittul. Good. That's the way we're going to say the Mishnah Arla according to Reish Lakish. According to Reish Lakish, it's good. What does that mean, it's good? I now understand the whole brisa regarding the egg. An egg. Now, it happens to be, this is a really good illustration. Nowadays, we buy eggs only by count. Right? In other words, we never go to the market and say, you know, give me a handful of eggs. For us, eggs are always sold by count. You always buy a dozen eggs, right? In fact, that's generally speaking the expression, you know, half a dozen, you know, six of one, half a dozen of another. In other words, eggs to us are always sold by count. But in the good old days, generally they were sold by count, not always. So for us, it wouldn't even be a discussion. But eggs are generally sold by count, therefore eggs are significant. Therefore, if I have a tarovis, if I have a mixture of eggs, where one egg is prohibited and 1,000 eggs are permitted, there's no bittul. Why? Because they're significant. Why? Because they're generally sold by count. And according to Reish Lakish, perfect. I get it. I understand the brisa. Hanichel, the Gemara makes exactly this point. Hanichel, Rabbi Shema Malakish, El, Rav Yochanan, Maikel, Amemar. The problem is according to Rav Yochanan. Why? Because Rav Yochanan says, the Mishnah in Arla says, not Kol Shedarko Limanos, but the correct way to read the Mishnah in Arla is Es Shedarko Limanos, which means that things are only significant when they are exclusively sold by count. Not generally, exclusively. Sometimes eggs are sold by count, sometimes eggs are not. So now, according to Rav Yochanan, why is there no bittul by eggs? That's the question. The Gemara is going to suggest an answer. Amar Rav Papa. Now the Gemara is going to offer an alternative solution. It's not an alternative solution. I take it back. It's another Tana, which is going to explain why there's no bittul. But basically, it's going to come back to the same point. It's significant, and that's why it's no bittul. You're right. In the Mishan Arla, at least according to Rav Yochanan, I don't understand why there's no bittul. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to have to leave the Mishan Arla, and we're going to see another Raisa together. The Gemara here, So Amar Rav Papa, Haitana, Tana de Litra Ketziosi, de Amar Kol Davisha Beminyan, Afila Bidarabanan, Lobata Vecholshekein Bida Araisa. So here we're going to have a brisa, and the brisa is going to teach us that anything which is counted, generally counted, is significant, and therefore it's not subject to bittul. Again, bittul blocker. As long as it's sold generally by count, did none. So now we're going to see now another Mishnah, where we're going to have exactly this discussion, that things are subject by count or not subject to bittul. Okay, litra ketzio. So let me give a brief introduction over here. First of all, we're talking about figs. Okay? And we're talking about truma of figs. Truma of figs, does the Torah require me to take off truma from figs? So don't answer that question too quickly. I'll answer it according to Rashi. The answer is no. The Torah does not require us to take off truma from figs. Because according to Rashi and Tosfos, throughout all of Shas, and here's an example, we're going to see this inside, the Torah requires me to take off trumas and maizos from what fruits? Only olives, grapes, and the five grains. And that's it. And there's no other fruit is required in the Torah to take off trumas and maizos. The Chachamim, however, mandated. But the Torah does not require me to do so. So because we're talking about figs over here, there's only an obligation to take off trumas and maizos on a rabbinic level, not on a biblical level. Okay, that's the first introductory point to this Mishnah. A second introductory point to this Mishnah, they used to press their figs. In other words, the way Rashi describes it, just like, you know, how we make cheese and we turn them into like these big wheels. So they did the same thing for figs. So basically, they cut the figs, they pressed it into a mold, and Rashi says it was actually circular. It was in a circular mold, and they pressed it down, so basically it looked like a big wheel of figs. Okay, that's what we called kitzios. The kitzios are the cut figs. So now we have the following Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Trumos. So let's say, by accident, I took off the Truma, I took off Truma from figs, and I pressed it into the other figs, meaning the non-Truma figs. Basically, we're talking here about a mixture of Truma and non-Truma. Now, how much do I need for Bittul? Right, I said this just a couple of minutes ago. By Truma, 1 to 100 is the ratio of Bittul for Truma. Alpi chavis ve'eno yodea be'ezer chavis darsa. Alpi koras ve'eno yodea be'ezer koras darsa. Now, what happened is I took the Truma figs, and by accident, I pressed it into one of the barrels. I just forgot which barrel. I pressed into one of the koras. Another kli, and I forgot which one it was. Now, we're going to have a debate. Now, this is going to be one of those debates where it's going to be a debate within a debate. Okay, today's stuff is a real. Just a lot of things. I know I'm going through it quickly, but this is a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in terms of what exactly is the machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. So there are four opinions over here to try to keep straight. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion. Rabbi Lazar Omer, here's how the debate goes. Meaning this is Rabbi Meir's version of the debate between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yoshua. Ronus alayonos kilohin prudos, vatachtonos malos es alayonos. According to Rabbi Eliezer, here's what we're going to do. Here's what I don't know. I took the truma figs and I pressed it into one of the molds. Now here's what I know. In the mold, there is the top of the mold, and then there's the interior of the mold. I know I pressed into one of the tops of the mold, meaning I didn't take the truma and press it into the interior of the mold. I knew it was somewhere on the superficial top. I know that. What Rabbi Eliezer allows me to do is he allows me to factor all the figs, even the figs that are betachtonos, even the figs that are below. Now, as Rashi points out, this is really difficult to understand. Meaning, I know the figs that are tachton, that the figs that are underneath, are not in the suffix. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, they could still count towards bittul. How can you do that? How can you allow figs, which I know is not even part of the mixture? How can they become part of the tarovis? And how can they allow for bittul? So Rashi says, well, you have to understand that we're talking about the truma of figs. Truma of figs is only an issur derabanan, not an issur daraisa, because again, according to Rashi, figs are only subject to truma samaisos midderabanan, not midderaisa, and so therefore it's an issur derabanan, which could be more makel. Okay, that's how Rashi says it. You could see the top Rashi on Dalet Amud Aleph, where he makes exactly this point. But anyway, Ronos Alyonos Kilohin Prudos Vatachtonos Malos Alyonos. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, not only can Bittul occur, but I can even take the lower figs, which I know is not even part of the Suffolk, and use them towards the Bittul, towards the nullification. Rabbi Yoshua Omer Im Yesha Me'apum Im Yalu V'Im Lav Apum Im Asurim V'Ashulayim Mutarim. And according to Rabbi Yoshua, no. I know that the Truma figs was on the exterior. It was on the lid of the all of these barrels. If I have 100 barrels, or 101 to be more accurate, and I don't know which barrel it went in, so then we're going to say Bittul. But if I don't have 101 barrels, we're not going to say Bittul. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua. So again, version number one of the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir's version of the Machlokas, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Lazar is super lenient, where he allows you to use all the figs, even the figs which I know is not even part of the mixture, to contribute towards Bittul. And Rabbi Yoshua says, no. If the Truma fig was placed on the lid of the barrel, so then I'm going to need 101 lids in order for Bittul to occur. Good. Version number two, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Lazar Omer, Yesham Me'apumim, Yaluim Ve'im Lav Apumim, Asurim Vashulai Mutarim. According to our second version of the Machlokas, which is Rabbi Yehuda's version of the Machlokas, what are we going to say? Rabbi Eliezer is going to take on the role of Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Eliezer says, if I have 101 lids, so then there's going to be Bittul. Otherwise, it will not be Bittul. And Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Afilo Yesham Shalosh Me'os Pumim, Lo ya'alu. Here's the part that you underline in the Gemara. This is the key line. Even if there are 300 barrels, there's not going to be bittul. Why not? Meaning 300 barrels, that's a lot. And the truma went into only one of the barrels. So why is there not going to be bittul? Answer, because the barrels are counted. And this is a davar shebe'e minyan. And so therefore, there's not going to be bittul. Now, what if the figs are pressed into the mold? Meaning the truma figs, by accident, I pressed it into one of the molds, not superficially on the lid, but actually into the mold themselves, into the barrel themselves. So then, according to everyone, there's going to be bittul. So, divrei hakol hayna plutai. Now, the Gemara says, what do you mean, everybody? We just went over the machlokas, Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yoshua, two versions of the machlokas, Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yoshua. What do you mean everyone agrees? I'm Rav Papa Hachi Kamar. No, Rav Papa says, no, let's try to articulate this last point even more clearly. Darsa be'igol ve'enu yodeh be'ezo makum igol darsa. Well, let's say I pressed it into the mold. I don't know where in the mold it was pressed, whether it was to the north, to the south, Oletzvona, Oledroma, Divra Hakol Yalu. So then we will allow Bittul to occur in one barrel itself. Anyway, period. We went through all that just to basically point out that according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yoshua, or other way around, Rabbi Yoshua, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's not going to be bittul. Why is there not going to be bittul? Because the barrels are counted. And because the barrels are counted, so therefore it's significant, it's chashuv, it's a davar shebe'e minyan, and therefore there's not going to be any bit on any nullification. So again, that was the end of a very long sentence. So let me just quickly summarize this point, and we're going to move on in the Gemara. We have read a braisa on Gimel Amud Braisa. A braisa says that if I have an egg, and the egg is coming from a trefa chicken, and the egg gets mixed in with 1,000 other eggs, there's not going to be bittul. Question, why not? Why is there not going to be bittul? 1 to 1,000. 1 to 2. And there's going to be bittul. 1 to 1,000, there's not going to be bittul. So either, well, the first approach is that's davar sheyesh lo matirin, but that, of course, only is if the egg is laid on yontif. That's not the case of treifa. Answer number two, no, it's the case of a treifa egg. Why, it's not a davar sheyesh lo matirin, it's a davar sheyein lo matirin, so why is there not going to be bittul? So the Gemara pointed out that it's a davar shebe'e minyan, something which is counted. If it's something it's counted, it's significant and not subject to the bittul. Who is of this a position that something which is counted is significant and therefore bittul blocker, meaning the chachamim stop bittul from occurring? So either it's, right, see if we can follow. It's Reish Lakish's reading of the Mishnah in Arla, right? That could be one candidate. Or the Mishnah in Trumos, where Rav Yoshua's opinion, according to Rav Yehuda, is that if it's something which is counted, it's not subject to bittul. Okay, those are your two possible candidates of bittul blockers, if it's something which is counted. Amar Rav Papa. No, sorry. Rav Ashi Amar. Okay, we're on Dal Amud Aleph. We are towards the top of the Amud, about 15 lines from the top. And now the Gemara is going to give our second and final approach to the Braisa. Again, the Braisa was problematic. Why? It's talking about an egg which is laid on Yontif. It's moksa, you can't move it, you can't eat it, you can't use it as a support for a bed. And if it's a suffix, it's going to be prohibited. And if it's mixed in with 1,000 other eggs, it's going to be prohibited. Okay, now what has vexed us from the time that we read the braisa? If it's a suffix, it's going to be prohibited. Well, if we're talking about moksa, suffix on moksa, and we're going to be machmir, and that's why the Gemara says we're not talking about muksa, we're talking about treifa. Right? That's been our approach since the Braisa. Rav Ashi says, you know what? I would like to do the following. I'd like to revisit the Braisa, and this is going to be our last time we're revisiting the Braisa. And I would like to say that the Braisa is not talking about treifa, but rather the Braisa is talking about muksa. Okay? It's talking about muksa, meaning the egg that's laid on yontif. So why are we going to be machmir by a safek? So Rav Ashi is going to introduce us now to a new idea, a new concept. Rav Ashi Amar La'olam Safik Yom Tov Safik Chol. It's a Safik Muksa, meaning the egg was laid sometime Beinish Mashos, between the weekday and Yantif. And why are we going to be Machmir? On an Issur D'Rabbanan? On a Safik Issur D'Rabbanan? So Rav Ashi says, let's introduce ourselves, let's reintroduce ourselves to the principle of davar sheyesh lo matirin. But you understand, and Rashi makes this point very clear. We talk davar sheyesh lo matirin in one of two contexts. The first context we were talking about is tarovis, in a mixture. Meaning, I have one egg which is muktza today, tomorrow it's going to be fine, getting mixed in with 1,000 other eggs. So, bittel? Don't rely on bittel. Because if we wait a simple 24 hours, it's all going to be mutter. So therefore, davar sheyesh lo matirin says, no bittel. That's the first context we were introduced to davar sheyesh lo matirin. Now we're going to be introduced to davar sheyesh lo matirin in the second context. Safek, meaning this one egg, it's not a mixture. This particular egg was possibly born on Yontif, possibly laid during the week. So now we're talking about a safek derabanan. Oh, but if we wait 24 hours, that egg is going to become permitted totally, even if it were laid on Yontif. So you know what? We're going to wait. Meaning, davar sheyesh lo matirin is going to block bittel. It's also going to block safek as well. Meaning, in these two contexts, davar sheyesh lo matirin is going to be powerful enough where it's going to block both. It'll block the bittel and it'll block safek. It'll prevent the general rules of safek derabban lekula to occur. So Rav Ashi says that could be our approach to the Braisa. Rav Ashi says that is our approach to the Braisa. And consequently, we don't have to change the discussion of the Braisa from Muksa to Treifa.
The suffix will disappear in 24 hours also.
Correct. That's exactly Rav Ashi's point. That's exactly his point. And so therefore we're gonna wait. We're gonna wait 24 hours, even though we're typically makel by an Issa Durabanan, by suffix Issa Durabanan. Okay, Tanya. Ad Khan, that takes us really to the end of the discussion of the Braisa from Gimel Amud Beis. And now, not a new discussion, but a Braisa. Acherim Omrim Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. This is a Braisa, actually. It's a Tosefta, if you want to be even more meticulous. Beitza Tochel Hi V'ima. An egg which is laid on Yantav, you're allowed to eat it together with its mother. Period. That's the end of the Tosefta. Okay. First of all, who's this Tosefta? Whose viewpoint is he espousing when it says you're allowed to eat the egg? That's laid on Yontif. So go back to the Mishnah. Go back to the first thing we learn when we open up the Masechta. He's holding like Beis Shammai. The author of this Braisa is holding like Beis Shammai. Now it happens to be that, based on what we know, makes a lot of sense. Meaning the Tosefta over here is quoting Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is a student of Shammai. Okay, good. In that regard, it works out great. The only issue that the Gemara is going to have is, what are we talking about? You're allowed to eat the egg, that's great. And you're allowed to eat the mother. Okay. That seems to be unnecessary, an unnecessary point. So the Gemara here tries to analyze this braisa. Well, if the chicken was designed and meant to be eaten for Yontif, meaning going into Yontif, I looked at the chicken, I earmarked the chicken, that'll be lunch tomorrow, that chicken. Okay. Great. So good. So in other words, it's muhan, and then the braisa seems to be making a point which is so obvious. And Bryces don't do that. So the Gemara says, okay, so must be that we're talking about a chicken where it was an egg-laying chicken, it was designed as an egg-laying chicken. Now, as an egg-laying chicken, that means it's muksa going into Yontif. I had no intention of eating it. So he v'ima asura. So the hamas gadol beitzim he v'ima asura. And then the conclusion, which should not be that it's permitted, but rather the conclusion should be it's prohibited. So am Rabbi Zera tochel agav ima. So Rabbi Zera suggests an interesting explanation of the Braisa. You know what the Braisa means? The Braisa means that we're ambiguous. Going into Yontif, we simply don't know. Meaning, we had no clear definition of what the chicken was. An egg-laying chicken, a chicken meant for lunch tomorrow. It was ambiguous going in. Hey, chidami, amar abayi kigon shalach hastam. We bought the chicken with really no, we didn't define it. Meaning the seller, I guess buyer and seller weren't clear with one, whatever. In other words, just, let's say it simply. There was no definition on that chicken. And now, going to Yontif, nishchata, if on Yontif I say to myself, you know what? We have some more guests coming for lunch today on Yontif. Let's shech the chicken. Hovera de la achila omedes. So then, hovera, which basically is the concept of breira. So then, retroactively, we can say that this chicken was meant to be an eating chicken, which also means that the egg that it produces also is going to be fine. Lo nishchata hovera de la gadla beitza omedes. And if we don't shecht it, so that means that this is an egg-laying chicken. And therefore, based on the definition of the chicken, that will also be what the definition of the egg is going to be as well. Okay? So that's one possible explanation of this Tosefta. It's creative. It's a little bit difficult, meaning the Braisa now is saying a lot. The Braisa is talking, invoking the rules of Breira in terms of defining what the chicken is, which will in turn define what the egg is.
In terms of Musa, is it fine to represent?
Right. In other words, correct. Meaning, and then the Braisa is subscribing to the general muksa issues. Right. Okay. Agreed. Okay. That's one approach to Tosefta.
On Yom Tov, we said that you follow Rabbi Yehuda and not Rabbi Shimon because you're normal.
Agreed. In other words, again, all we're doing right now is just trying to say Pshat in the Braisa. Meaning, who we follow is not really the main goal of the Gemara right now. The Gemara just wants to know, say a Pshat in the Braisa. So okay, so the Gemara says one. Rav Mari Amar Guzma Kitani. Rav Mari says, can I tell you what the Braisa means? He's going to offer his understanding of the Braisa. It's an exaggeration. Now, this is generally speaking, the Gemara, we've seen this before, where sometimes the Gemara speaks in exaggerated terms, in exaggerated speech, and Rav Mari says, yeah, that's what we'll do with the Braisa. Ditanya Achema Mishim Rabbi Lazar Beitza Tochal Hivi Ama VeEfroch VeKlipaso. And I'm going to support this position that really it's just exaggerated talk. For example, I'll show you another Braisa. Very similar. The Braisa says, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, that you can eat an egg laid on Yontov, together with its mother, and you can eat a chick, together with the shell. Now, eating a shell, the Gemara says, my klipa so. What does that mean? Ilema klipa mamish klipa basachilahi. You're not eating a shell. Right, that's not happening. Ela efroach biklipaso. So it must mean that you can eat the chick in the shell. Chick in the shell, meaning we're talking now about and not an unfertilized egg, but it's a fertilized egg. It's more than a fertilized egg, meaning there's already a developing chick inside. And what the Bryce is telling us is that you're allowed to eat the chick that's inside the shell.
Why don't we look at the chicken as a clip up or the egg?
Well, give me a moment. Just give him 1 second. Ad kan lo pligi rabban Allah de rabban Lazar ben Yaakov el hechad yasal avir olam. Av hechad lo yasal avir olam lo pligi. So the Gemara says, well, that's just implausible. Not implausible, but that's untenable. Meaning, we're going to see in just a short couple days from today that if I have an undeveloped chick, right. In other words, it's a chick that's still developing inside the egg, and you crack the egg open, you find... I mean, it's disgusting. Let's just be honest. But you find a developing chick inside. Everyone's in agreement that you cannot eat that chick. So what are we saying now? The chick inside the shell. No one allows us to eat it. Ela afroach v'klipaso guzma hachanami tochal hi v'ima guzma. So it must mean not a chick inside the shell. It means the shell over here is just simply guzma. It's just an exaggerated speech. So when we say the egg and its mother, it's just exaggerated speech. That's all it means. So that's another possible pshat within the Braisa.
You do have a case with you shecht the cow and you find a baby cow.
Correct. And we're going to see, and Dafav, it's coming up in a couple days from now. So we're going to see together that the same rules don't apply to an egg. Okay, fine. Good. We are moving on. Itmar. Okay, new topic of discussion in today's Daf. So up until today, meaning... We covered a lot today. Really a lot of information. A Mishnah Arla, Mishnah Truma, the Tosefta. But basically, what we covered today is we went back to yesterday's Braisa on Daf Gimel Amud Beis. We try to find a pshat in the Braisa. Why is a Suffolk Beitza and why is a Tarovis of Beitza that's laid on Yontav? Why is it going to be prohibited? So either one, number one, the conversation has turned to Trefa, not Beitza Shenol de Biontav, okay, which has its issues, or we're talking about an egg which is laid on Yontav, and the reason why we're going to be machmer by a suffek even though it's only an Issur d'Rabbanan, is because of Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. So that's one area which we explore today. And a second area which we explore today was the Tosefta that says that you're allowed to eat an egg and its mother on Yontif, at least according to Rabbi Eliezer. And what's the pshat in that brisa? The Gemara offered just two pshatim in that brisa. Okay, we move on. It my Shabbos v'Yontif. What if I have Shabbos and Yontif contiguous with one another? So let's say Yontif is on a Sunday. Okay, just to make this simple. Rav Amar Nol D'Bezeh Asur B'Zeh, Rav Yochanan Amar Nol D'Bezeh Muteres B'Zeh. Okay, so of course let's assume that we go like Beis Hillel, right? That's good, that we do. Beis Hillel says that an egg which is laid on Yontif is prohibited. What if the egg is laid on Shabbos, and now the next day is Yontif? So Rav says, Nol D'Bezeh Asur B'Zeh. So Rav says, prohibited. The egg which is laid on Shabbos is going to be prohibited on Yontif. And Rav Yochanan Amar Nol D'Bezeh Muteres B'Zeh, and Rav Yochanan disagrees. So now, what's at the core machlokas over here? Neimarka Sava Rav Kedusha Achasi. So the Gemara says, well, maybe because what Rav is of the opinion is that when you have Shabbos and Yontif back to back, and they are contiguous with one another, they basically mold into one day. The 48-hour period becomes one 48-hour period of Kedusha. And so therefore, what Yontif really is just an extension of Shabbos, even though, mind you, it's a little bit of a brain teaser, because the rules change slightly. Yontif, you're allowed to cook. Shabbos, you're not allowed to cook. But still, principally, fundamentally, it's one long day. And so therefore, if the egg is laid on Shabbos, so then on Yontif, on Sunday Yontif, you can't eat it, because Sunday Yontif is really just part of Shabbos. It's an extension of Shabbos. So the Gemara says, that's a wonderful explanation, but we know that that's just simply not correct. Because Ha'amar Rav halacha karpas zekenim v'aliba de Rabbi Eliezer damishtei kedusha osein. Because the Gemara says, remember an Erevin? I don't know if we remember, so good. So that's why we come back, just to remind us. Remember in Erevin we said that Rav himself says that no, Shabbos and Yontif are viewed as two distinct days. Just happen to be back to back to one another, but they're two distinct days. So that's not the explanation. So the Gemara says, you know what the issue over here is? Whether we subscribe to Rabba's Hachana. Rav Isle Hachana de Rabba, Rav Yochanan Leisle Hachana de Rabba. So the Gemara says, that's the issue over here. Do we subscribe to the Hachana principle mentioned by Rabba? Where, in order for a food to become permitted, on Yontif, it has to be prepared from a weekday. Here, when the egg is laid on Shabbos, so it was not prepared on a weekday, it was prepared on Shabbos for Yontif. Rav says it's prohibited because he subscribes to Hachana de Rabba, and Rav Yochanan does not subscribe to Hachana de Rabba. And the Gemara points out this, the machlokas, Tanayim Kitanai. No, the B'Shabbos Tocha B'Yontif, B'Yontif Tocha B'Shabbos. According to the Tanakama, you can eat an egg on Yontif when it was laid on the previous day on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Adani Machlok, Shabbashama Omerim Tochal, Beisam Omerim Lo Tochal. And Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you cannot. So this machlokas between Rav and Rav Yochanan is an older machlokas between the Tanayim. Story time. Ushbezechina de Rav Adar Ava Havulei Hanach Beitza Miyontov Lishabbos. The innkeepers of Rav Adar Ava had eggs, and they were laid on Yontif, and now the next day was Shabbos. Also, Kame Amalei Maila Atviina Ha'idna V'Nechlina LaMachar. So let's do the following. Let's roast them today. Today's Yontif, and let's eat them tomorrow. Amalei. So Rav Adar Ba'ava's response was very quick and very to the point. My daitech, Rav Yochanan, lachik Rav Yochanan. So look, I know what your thought process is. We just saw together machlok between Rav and Rav Yochanan. And generally speaking, of that machlok is we're siding with Rav Yochanan. So I understand you want to be lenient. But you understand leniency over here is not going to work. I feel Rav Yochanan lo kashari ela legom ala machar. Ava b'yum alo. Rav Yochanan allows you to eat it the next day. Eat it raw the next day. You can't prepare it on Yontif, the day it was laid, if for tomorrow. In other words, today, it's prohibited. Today, it's muktzah. Only tomorrow you're allowed to eat it. Now, how are you going to eat the egg on Shabbos? It's very simple. Crack it into a cup and drink it. You can't cook it on Shabbos. Right? Shabbos, there's no permission to cook it. V'hatanya, as Rashi points out, this is a support, this is a proof. Achas, Beit Sashanol, the B'Shabbos, V'achas, Beit Sashanol, the B'yantav, E'matat, and Osol, the Chasus, Bo, Esakli, V'lo, the Smach, Bakare, Mita. In other words, on the day it was laid itself, you cannot move it, period. Next question. Usbitzechina de Rapapa Varmele, how Gavadasal Kama de Rapapa, Havale Hanach Beitzim is Shabbos Liyantav. Here we're going to go the other direction. The eggs were laid on Shabbos, and now the next day was Yantav. And the question was introduced to Rapapa, Asal Kame Amale Maule Mechlin Alam Machar. So, can we eat the egg tomorrow? Again, it was laid on Shabbos, the next day is Yantav, can we eat it the next day? So Rav Papa says, come back to me tomorrow. I'm not ready to answer your question today. And Rav Papa recuses himself from the question because he's a little bit drunk right now. In other words, a Shabbos meal, a Yontif meal. So he's drinking a little bit. He's drinking a little bit of wine. So he feels that right now, right, driving under the influence. So he's poskening under the influence. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to have a clear mind when he's poskening. So therefore he says to him, look, I can't answer the question right now. You'll come back tomorrow. And I'll give you the answer tomorrow. So the Gemara spells this out. So, l'chavre mishum shechros. Okay, look at the bottom Rashi in the Amud. Rashi quotes Pesukim, you can't pasken halacha while under the influence. Ki asal amachar amar lei, comes back the next day to Rav Papa, and what does he say to him? Iku hashta. So if I pasken for you yesterday in my state of inebriation, ishtale, I totally forgot. Meaning, now it happens to be, we know he didn't. In other words, we know that even in his slightly inebriated state, he said nothing. He, in fact, told them, I'm not saying anything. But then the next day, as he has now a clear mind, so he basically says to him, whatever happened yesterday, just right, strike it off the record, even though we happen to know he said nothing the previous day. And now let's deal with the issue. The egg was laid on Shabbos, and now we want to know, can we eat it on the next day, which is Yontif? So what's our normal klale hapsak? What do we normally say? Rav and Rav Yochanan, we follow like Rav Yochanan. That's what we normally say. Like with every good rule, there are exceptions, and here's an exception. So Rav, Rav Yochanan, Alach, Rav Yochanan, Ha, my Rav, Hilchasa, Kavasa, Derav, Bahani, Chlas, Bein Lekula, Bein Lechomra. But there are three exceptions to that rule. This would be one of the exceptions. Meaning, like by Abaye and Rava. We normally pass like Rava. Six times we pass like Abaye. Shammai and Hillel, we normally pass like Beis Hillel. There are, if I'm not mistaken, six times that we go like Beis Shammai and not like Beis Hillel. So here, Rav and Rav Yochanan, we normally go like Rav Yochanan, but in three occasions we go like Rav. This is one of the occasions that we go like Rav, and therefore the answer is going to be prohibited. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Let's just finish up today with the following. Eitzim shenashu min adekel b'shabbos, asol ha'asikan b'yamtov. The Gemara quotes Rav Yochanan saying the following. Branches fell off the tree on Shabbos. Now, obviously on Shabbos, there's nothing to do with those branches. Those branches are mukza, totally prohibited, not even open for discussion. What is open for discussion is, what about the next day? Meaning, let's say the next day is Yantiv. So Rav Yochanan says, you can't use those branches the next day. Now the Gemara thinks for a moment. The Gemara says, what? Rav Yochanan, in the case of the egg laying, you were makel. In other words, the egg which is laid on Shabbos, the next day on Yantiv, you said it was okay. Now again, from our perspective, we don't pass like Rav Yochanan. But okay, neither here nor there. Rav Yochanan allowed the egg to be eaten the next day on Yantiv. And meanwhile, when it comes to the branches that fell on Shabbos, you can't use them the next day. So the Gemara says, Al tishiveni beitza. And don't ask me, the Gemara over here is sidestepping the issue. Not sidestepping, but let's say it better. The Gemara is addressing the issue head on. Why is it that in the case of eggs, Rav Yochanan's makel, why is it in the case of the tree falling down on Shabbos, you can't use the tree the next day? So the Gemara says like this. I'm sorry. The Al tishiveni beitza, my time of beitza, mishum debiyum anamichaz yelagoma. Look, the egg which is laid on Shabbos. Again, we're talking about Shabbos and Yontif back to back. Yontif is on a Sunday. If the egg is laid on Shabbos, and we're telling people, no, you can't eat it on Shabbos, so people understand, oh, I get it. Meaning, it's possible to eat an egg raw. I wouldn't do it. It doesn't make me excited. But at least it's possible. The fact that it's prohibited, everyone's going to arrive at the correct conclusion. And the correct conclusion is, it's muktzah. Right? It's a muktzah issue. And so therefore, the next day it's going to be fine. However, Eitzim de lo chazer lo yumahi, Yishar lo lamachar asal memer, b'yumai na mishar ev, esma mishum shabbos de lo chazer la asaka. But when it comes to the wood, you see, when I tell people, well, don't handle the wood on Shabbos, so people are not going to say, oh, I know why, it's a muksa issue. People are going to say, why? No, I know why. Because it's Shabbos, and you're not allowed to burn a fire on Shabbos. So people are going to walk away with the erroneous conclusion that the reason why I can't handle the wood on Shabbos is because it's Shabbos. Now, if that's people's conclusions, so then let's just take away Shabbos and let's replace it with Yontif. What happened if the wood falls on Yontif? So people are going to say, well, it was only prohibited on Shabbos because it was Shabbos. Now that it's Yontif, it must be okay. So therefore, Rav Yochanan says, I'm going to be more strict when it comes to the wood falling on Shabbos, because if I wasn't strict, so people are going to walk away with an erroneous conclusion. So therefore, I'm going to be more strict when it comes to the wood falling on Shabbos. Okay. This is where we're going to pause for today. We'll pick it up tomorrow. So again, a discussion about the Brice on Gimel Amud Beis. The Suffolk egg, the egg which is possibly laid ben Hashmashos versus, burned during the week, laid during the week or on Yontif, the Braisa says it's going to be prohibited. So again, the Gemara spent a lot of time suggesting that's talking about a treif egg. And then finally, the Gemara on the top of Dal Amud Aleph says, no, it's talking about a muksa issue. And we're going to be machmir by Suffolk muksa. And Rav Ashi introduces us to the idea of, yes, we are, because Davish Yesh Lamatirin, which is now has two applications, a Tarovis application and a Suffolk application. And then the Gemara spends some time with a Braisa that says that you're allowed to eat an egg and its mother late on Yontif, and the Gemara offers a couple of Pshatim over there. And then finally we introduce the topic today of what happens when I have Shabbos and Yontif, which are back to back, and I have an egg late on one day, can I eat the next day? Machlokis Rav Yochanan and Rav. Rav Yochanan's Mekel, Rav is Machmir. And the Gemara says, and normally we side with Rav Yochanan. Here's one of those examples, the exception to the rule, where we're going to go like Rav and we're going to be Machmir.